we're back, Stripe Show Podcast, on a Thursday. I'm your host, Travis Fulton. Thank you for making us part of your day. Special one here today, audio only. Been working on getting this gentleman back on the podcast. A lot of you reaching out, asking when we can get Randy Smith back on the podcast, a follow-up to a pod that we did, I would say, just under a couple years ago. A lot has transpired since then. Of course, his top player, the number one player in the world, Scottie Scheffler, just dominating. I'm okay utilizing that word right now, dominating professional golf. And with the Masters on the doorstep, of course, Scheffler won there a couple years ago. He's coming off a couple wins and a second in his last three outings. Mr. Smith has been kind enough to take a little time for us here back on the podcast. Randy, thank you so much for being back on. I appreciate it.
Well, Travis, thanks for having me, bud.
A lot has happened here. Your man, Scottie Scheffler, he's impressive. I got to tell you, I didn't think I would see someone from tee to green, Randy, be as dominant as we have seen from Scottie, and dominant is the word. You know, you throw Tiger Woods out there, of course, he was much the same way in his prime. Has he even impressed you? Has he even kind of, you know, maybe exceeded what you would maybe expect from Scottie Scheffler and just how good or great he's been from tee to green?
Exceeded? No, not really. I think he validated what I've been feeling for a long time. You know, he's just performing. He's enjoying himself, especially in the ball striking end. And you know, he's got a good view of the golf course he's playing right now. He sees shots really, really well right now. And when you can see them, you can complete them.
So Scotty is very much, it sounds like, has been a visual player. He doesn't strike me as someone, even back to his youth days, Randy, take us back to when you were teaching him when he was younger. He doesn't strike me as someone who's too consumed on what it might look like, maybe what TrackMan is telling him, what the numbers are. He's more about the shot that he wants to hit. He wants to see it, and then he wants to hit it. Is that an accurate description of Scotty through the years?
It's fairly accurate. Yeah, he does have, you know, he's got his track man, and I've got mine, you know, but when he's using his track man, he uses four boxes. And it's used primarily, you know, a lot of it's for the wedges, but all clubs, he's got four boxes, club head speed, distance carried, and basically the spin numbers. Mm-hmm. And that's it.
That's the only thing he wants to see.
You bet.
How about video? How often does he want to look at his swing?
Not very often. You know, every once in a while we'll take a shot and just see what it looks like, you know. But good Lord, it's over a year since I've shot any video that we've sat down and just looked at. Oh, look at this. Oh, we need to do this or whatever. And the feeling is, as good as he had a swing thought about, oh gosh, you know, I'd say it's over a year and a half ago, where we looked at something as far as getting the club a little better at the top for him to deliver a little bit better. It was something very small, stuck a couple sticks in the ground behind him and just said, okay, let's do this. You play on this side of those sticks. Okay, you don't get behind those sticks going back or coming in. Mm-hmm. And, you know, he carries the two sticks in his bag to this day. So, you know, that basically is it. You know, Travis, funny thing about it, you know, when somebody has been doing what he's been doing ball striking wise, this isn't something new. This is 2.5-3 years of this, and it's just getting a little better, a little better, a little better. And the biggest key is it's kind of like that pitcher that comes off the mound in the, you know, the top of the eighth or the bottom of the eighth. And he goes over and sits down on the bench and he's got a no hitter going. Mm-hmm. Okay. I mean, a bunch of teammates aren't going to be rolling over doing rah-rah stuff.
Right.
And you're not going to go over and say, you know, I love the way you're really good with that left foot coming off the rubber right now. This is great. You're not going to go in there and even talk about it that much unless, you know, unless he's got something. You wouldn't really talk to that pitcher. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of the way I feel about it right now is just let this go. If he has a question, we'll answer it. There's going to be a minor tweak. And normally it comes right back to the center of the golf club. And the biggest thing that he's going to be working on, say, going into Augusta is trajectories. Pardon me, not in that order. Trajectories, distances, and, you know, getting a feel, obviously, when he gets there, what the ball's going to do once it hits the green. Mm-hmm. Which way is it going? Where do we play to get here? Things like that. That's where his focus is right now. It's not in the technique. You know, technique, not now.
Yeah. It's interesting when I talk to, there's been some sports psychologists that I've had come on, and one of them, who's one of the top sports psychologists out there, I'm not going to mention his name, but he told me off the air, I said, you know, what's one of the more challenging things that you have working with the best players? And he said to me, he says, you know, that it's convincing them that who they are and what they do is good enough. Like, yep. What they do is good enough. It got them here. It's good enough. Yes, you can make some tweaks here or there and have some incremental improvements, or maybe you attack a weakness. You know, there's things to work on, right, and ways to do it. But who you are and what you do is good enough. And I really, it kind of hit home with me. And I think about Scheffler coming out of college, right? And Bo Hostler he played primarily number one. And then, you know, Scheffler and Gim, and like, they have this great team. But, you know, Scheffler was just kind of part of the group. And then he turns pro, and it kind of took him a while to crack the code, you know, to get his win. But, and you look back, and all along, he just kind of was learning and believing in himself, and maybe a little bit here and a little bit there. And then pretty soon the light comes on. He's seen the courses once or twice, and off he goes, right? And he just starts winning. And here he is now flourishing with confidence. And so it just strikes me when I look at Scheffler, he is that person. Like, he does believe that who he is and what he's brought to the table is good enough, and it's flourishing. Is that accurate?
No, I'd say it's very accurate. You know, if you go back to his college days, you know, people don't remember this or don't – probably wasn't out there that much. He was playing hurt most of his college career. And, you know, growth pains are severe sometimes, and somebody grew as fast as he did.
Wow.
So his body was not feeling 100% really through college. Now, he played pretty good his freshman year. I think his freshman of the year that year. He did pretty darn good his senior year, but there was a lot of little ouches and dings in there that he was dealing with. And not a lot of people really knew to the degree. And he kind of fought through that with a marvelous career. And that started getting better his senior year. And once he got out, started playing for a living. He's doing a little bit different regime with his body, his exercise program, so forth and so on. And he's doing it to this very day, and maybe a little more upscale version. But he feels pretty darn good.
Yeah.
When you feel good, you know, your attitude's better and everything. But as sure as I say this, what he did at the Players with that neck situation. Still, that, if you want to know something that amazed me, that amazed me.
Yeah.
Because that was severe pain. And he figured a way to step out of the way on the cut, hold on to it when he could. He trusted his marvelous hands and used them to get it around the golf course and at least get him to Sunday, where he started to feel himself a little bit more. Mm-hmm. And win the golf tournament. That to me was impressive. That reminded me of some of the things he did when he was in college, when he really wasn't feeling physically that well.
Yeah, it really is a sign of a great player, kind of a B game, working through injury. Maybe you don't have a particular part of your game, but you continue to get the most out of it. Remarkably, the Players, you know, positive 6.4 off the tee, positive 6.4 approach. I mean, just remarkable. with what he was dealing with in his neck. Of course, he wins the Players. He wins Arnold Palmer. And I want to get back to his swing and I want to ask you specifically, of course, about his putting here in a moment. But I want to ask you about a short game technique first. You know, one of the things, Randy, and I don't think you're on X or Twitter or, you know, social media that month, and God bless you. I wish I could do the same thing because it's not great for your mental health. But
well, when you don't have a lot of men, you know, why would I ever get
yeah. I know. First? Yeah. No, you don't need to. No, you don't need to. You're not missing anything. So, there but one of the things that is debated a lot, Randy, is the idea, I think in the modern teaching, when you look at short game, it's utilizing the bounce more. It's certainly discussed, right? Let the club head come in, utilize the bounce, get the leading edge off the ground in general, and that's a good stock shot, right? We'll just leave it at that. But then on the other side, you have guys like Scottie Scheffler, Jordan Spieth, a lot of guys from Texas, Randy. They put that leading edge on the ground more times than not around the green. They're not afraid to lean the shaft forward and get the leading edge maybe a little stickier at the bottom. The attack angle maybe a little bit more abrupt. Scheffler is brilliant at it. Jordan Spieth is brilliant at it. You've taught your entire career, Dallas, Texas, Royal Oaks. You've been in Texas. You've seen the surface, the wind blowing. That shaft lean is a big deal. How do you balance that with using the leading edge, but also knowing maybe there's times to not use the leading edge with your players? I'm just curious how that kind of fits overall, just in the grand scheme of teaching short game.
Well, I think if leading edge versus the bounce comes from comfort of the player. You know, a player is going to be comfortable with one shot or the other or both. Mm-hmm. But where they become great players is when they know the difference of when to use the leading edge and when to use more of the bounce. Mm-hmm. You think about using the bounce on a shot around the green. If you're using the bounce, you're probably going more up or you're checking it or something like that. If you're not using the bounce and you're going more leading edge, you're driving it and maybe trying to create a little more friction. Mm-hmm. And you see a lot more leading edge shots as you get further from the green rather than around the green. Mm-hmm. In fact, Scotty's best shots, some of the best shots I've ever seen him hit, it was nothing but bounce. Mm. He can get balls off the putting green, and he does it all the time. Mm. And it's just a perfect – and for him, it's a good drill for feel because, you know, you've got that perfect surface down there, and you want that perfect contact with – ball in the ground. And so I think it's all shot dependent. If I'm going to be teaching somebody or somebody on their short game, not Scotty so much, because his is a field that's developed with a little kid. He used to hit a lot of stabby shots that would tick, 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 and stop, but uses a little bit more of the bounce and more, many times a little hook stroke that been off the map coming in at about squirrel high.
Yeah.
And that stuff, you kind of make it up. If you go out there and you try to teach it, you got to throw some ideas out there. Okay, let's try this. See what you think. Let's go back, put open face, lean left, lean shaft. Let's go across it and see what it does. All right, let's do this. Let's snap hook this little shot here and see how the ball reacts once it hits green. You know, everything is shot dependent. I mean, the type of shot and the lie. How is the ball lying? And in what surface is the ball lying? Is this a hard pan? Is this soft? Is this way or that way? Scotty has hit so many balls, especially in the winter months out here. You know, we'll get up a short game area and find the absolute worst area with moisture and to the point of casual water, where he hits the shots out of it. Now he may use the leading edge a little bit, and then he may go into one lie that's just soaking wet and soft ground and just use nothing but bounce and almost hit the same shot. You know, it's just what the feel is, what he feels he can do the best to get the best result. And I think that's the most important thing. What do you feel like you can do to get the best result? That's for players, just normal everyday players that go out. Is it going to be putter, leaning edge? Is it going to bounce? Is it going to be my 60? Is it going to be my 56? What are you the most comfortable with achieving that shot? Okay, and that's, I think a lot of that's what Scotty does. He's going to use his 60-degree sand wedge most all the time. Mm-hmm. He can loft it down to a 48, 50-degree club and just have fun with it. Or he can play it up there at 64, 68 degrees, depending upon what he needs to do. And it's not so much a philosophy, unless you're maybe like Alex Noren, who does every shot that way.
Yeah.
Really attacks it with a leading edge and chops down on it. And most of his shots are lower, spinnier, hippier type shots.
Mm-hmm.
Scotty can go up almost easier than he can go down.
It almost looks like with Scotty that every shot he is working the ball, whether it's the drive, it's the iron, and it's the short game shot. Every shot he might be trying to do something a little bit different, right? On every single shot. I love to see him. I know he likes to see that ball kind of die right off the tee, but then he'll draw the iron in there. And what you're telling me is around the green, it may not be just this one stop shot that he's hitting 8, 9 out of 10 times. He's going to go ahead and maybe draw the one in there, use the leading edge the next time, use the bounce the next time. I mean, it is truly kind of a very much an art here that we're watching as he's kind of navigating the course. And I think you can see it and appreciate it more in the full swing.
Yes.
But I got to tell you, man, his short game is so damn good. And some of the shots that he hits, I'm just absolutely amazed, you know. And I go back to when he won the Masters in 2022 and just like, my God, this guy is brilliant around the greens.
Well, you know, Travis, you bring up a really good point, and it goes back to, I think, his young days here in the club when he was coming up. I mean, absolute golf nut. I mean, every day, all day, morning till dark, and loved doing it. One of those deals where mom and daddy and those people are so sweet to him. He comes to the golf course, and they're not out here pushing him to do anything. You know, he is out here creating at 10, 12 years old. I mean, he's creating shots. And the more he was doing it, you know, he had to have kind of a template. You know, I can sit there or the next coming of the greatest instructor who ever walked the face of the earth and say, well, we need to do more of this with that short game shot, or we need to do more of this, and maybe we need to change club. Blah, blah. All those are not good suggestions. But until you go out there with your wedges or whatever, and you see in your mind look what I just did. How did I do that? Okay. But he got to almost, it was like cheating for him because he got to watch great players that I've been fortunate enough to have out here at the club work with or whatever. I mean, he said much players like Justin Leonard, Colt Most, John Rollins, Martin Flores, Chris Cox, Ryan Palmer.
Yeah.
I mean, we can go on and on with those. And you know, just sitting there and watching them. A great example of that was when he was about, I'd say, 11, 12 years old. I look over, I'm giving a short game lesson to a member over on the side of our practice screen. He is in the bunker with his sand wedge over his knees, sitting on a den caddy in the sand. And he's watching Chris Cox, who was a great player, played the tour for a while, All-American to Oklahoma State. And Chris is in the bunker hitting bunker shots. And Scotty's sitting 3 feet away from him on this den caddy right in front of him. And he watched him hit shots. This goes on. I give us this session. I was giving us 45 minutes an hour. They were there at least that amount of time. And I'm fixing to leave, and I see Chris pat him on the head, and they've been talking back and forth. I don't know what they're saying. And I see Chris leave, and he waves, and Scotty waits for a second, and he kind of looks at the sand, looks at the shot Chris had been hitting for about an hour. And Scotty takes a sand wedge out, and the next thing I know, he's hitting the same shot, right? Well, I don't pay much attention. I was finishing up my session, and all of a sudden, excuse me, all the, I think I just swallowed the bug.
Take your time.
A little swig of water here.
Yeah, take your time.
Excuse me. Anyway, Chris is gone, so he starts hitting the same shot.
Mm-hmm.
Walking away, I hear this scream, just screaming. Yeah, yeah, woo-wee, yippee. I'm going, what in the heck is going on with this kid? I walked down there and said, what are you doing? He says, what's this? Well, Chris was hitting the ball on this high point, and then it would trickle down to a pin that was below it, right? Scotty's got a sand wedge, had no grooves on it. It was a junior sand wedge. How light they would be. He's in this bunker. He hits the shot, and he said, what's this? He hits it dead perfect. Goes up, hits on top, checks beautifully, trickles down the hole. What's this? Now, what's this? And then he hits it again. The ball goes a little bit higher. He hit it really, really nuked it. It flies to the flat by the pin. One hop stopped. He's not 10, 11 years old. And I go, what's this? He says, see that? See that? I said, yeah, well, what do you get out of it? What are you figuring out here? What's going on? And he says, Randy, the harder I hit it, the more it spins.
Yeah. What?
This is the coolest thing I've ever done. What? And so he starts doing and hitting these shots. I watched it for about 10, 15 minutes. I just shook my head. Anyway, this kid is absolutely just spanking the sandwich. His takeaway from watching Chris, the harder or the faster the club is going through the sand, the more friction it created and the more backspin he created. And that's cool for him because the kids he's playing with, you know, in his little junior tournaments, they ain't not spinning sandwiches out of bunkers. And he could. Man, carried that around like a coat of armor. He thought that was so cool. Same thing sitting there watching. Good Lord, Martin Laird was in here doing stuff. He'd watch Martin, and Martin didn't talk a whole lot. But Scotty could get him to talk. And Scotty wasn't a big talker. He was a big listener, a big watcher, imitator. And he'd watch him. Good Lord, we can go back to players. These are older guys like Joel Edwards. Him and Scotty really kind of bonded a long time ago. Scotty was a little bitty kid. Joel's out here hitting balls on the range. We've been grinding like you wouldn't believe on Joel's wedge game. And we got him dialed into about an 85-yard shot wedge to bring the flight down. And he's trying to hit this pole that's out there at 85 yards. And he's hitting some of the most beautiful golf shots you've ever seen in your life. And Scotty just sits in caddy watching him while I'm working with him. Doesn't say anything. And then finally, Scotty pops up and says, Joel, are you trying to hit that pole? And Joel says, yes, Scotty, I'm trying to hit that pole. Scotty says, okay. Sat there for about 2 or 3 minutes. Went over right beside him, pulled out his sand wedge. Second ball he hit, bing, hit the pole. The fourth ball he hit, bing, hit the pole. And just to make one better, on the seventh ball he hit the pole again 3 out of 7 times. And he just came back over and sat down on the din caddy. And Joel Edwards, with a tour win on his resume and everything, sat there and looked at him and said, really? And he just shrugged his shoulders. And then he wandered off of someplace else. To the other side. Yeah.
I love
he did yeah. all this by imitation.
Mm.
He had a phenomenal library of influences, especially in the short game, watching guys chip the ball. And they take him out and play with him. You know, mm-hmm. Some of the best money grind matches I ever saw were two kids that were playing nationwide. And one of them, they both played 1 year on the tour, BJ Staten and D.A. Wyvern's son, Wyvern. And those two tour guys with big bags take Scotty out there, throw his bags in the middle of the golf cart. Scotty would run down the fairway. He'd play with them, but he watched everything they did.
Mm. I love that. Scotty was a youngster, he was curious, and you know, he would watch, like you said, he was a good listener and imitation. I love that. He could, he, you know, he built that, that memory bank. You know, he wasn't the talker, but he was watching, he was listening, and he was imitating, and he was building this incredible library up, and discovery, right? Like I, you know, just the idea that he told you of the spin, here's how it works, you know, the discovery mm-hmm. to me is just brilliant in at such a young age.
And, you know, it was much earlier than, you know, kids in high school, junior high, all of a sudden kind of figure out a little bit of that stuff. But he just kept looking at various things, flighted shots. He always loved flighted, you know, in the low burning foreiron. And, you know, where most people say, well, that's not quite the swing we're working on. I'm going, do it again. Let's go. Let's flight that ball down. Because all these things he did with moving the ball were all connected to targets. Everything he did, when I first saw him, when he first came out as a seven-year-old kid, and his parents said, well, what do you think? You know, I'm figuring, I'm, you know, this next coming to Tiger Woods. Oh, boy, here we go. And I sat there and I watched him. I ended up watching him for an hour and 15 minutes. So I thought I was going to watch him for about 5 or 10. And call shots out. He would hit the shot I call out. Are, you know, pretty close to it. But every shot he hit, Travis, was tied to the target. Hit me a draw to where. Hit me a fade to where. Hit that pole, which club you want me to hit it with. Okay, that pole's 8 feet tall. It's 85 yards in front of me. You know, hit it with four iron. Got it. Here we go. Mm-hmm. He wouldn't shy away from it. He had such a good picture of what he wanted to do, and then he let his body and his feels create the shot.
Yeah.
You know, granted, there's some teaching, there's some this, there were some grip things. Sure. We fiddled with some grip issues early on, but which you do with young kids all the time. But as the time was right, he would make the changes appropriately. Especially when he saw benefit. He's still that way to today. He'll do something different if he sees it's going to be better than what he's doing.
I found a swing, and I'll send it to you, Randy, of Scotty when he was playing in an AJGA event, and he was hitting a driver. It was a really good angle. He was probably 12, 13.
Okay.
And then I captured a swing of Scotty last year. I can't remember what tournament it was, but anyway, the angles are pretty close.
Right.
And it's amazing to see the similarities, you know, I mean, in the footwork and the finish and, you know, the only like maybe major difference you could see when he was younger and a little bit, it was camera angle. The club head maybe got a little behind him early, where now the club head looks a little more out in front of him, you know, as an adult. And so like you could see the initial takeaway maybe was a little different where the club head was in space and relative to his body.
Right.
But by God, Randy, like the turn and the footwork and the finish and the spine, I mean, it and the rhythm, it was Scottie Scheffler, a mini version, you know? I mean, it was amazing to see the DNA was, I think, very much still intact years and years later. As the number one player in the world. So I know you're busy. I want to transition here, to his putting, and what we're seeing now, in the improvement of Scottie Scheffler's putting. I want to, before we talk about where he is right now, if you could just like take us back to when, you know, Scottie was, you know, he was struggling there, right? I mean, it's no mystery of, you know, I think where he was, God, I look at some of these stats. I'm going to share a couple stats with you, and then I'm going to share with where he finished. It's just, I can't even comprehend what I'm, you know, how this works. Like, you go back to 2023 at the U.S. Open, Randy. I'll go back to Memorial. Mm-hmm. Back in June of 2023, he lost 4.6 strokes on the green and finished third.
Mm-hmm.
Then he goes 2 weeks later to the U.S. Open and loses 8.5 strokes putting and finishes third.
Right.
like, huh? You know, and then, you know, then you get into, you know, into the summer, and, you know, I think, you know, he was definitely struggling. And take me back to the heel strike and the putter and some of the struggles that were happening with the putter, and kind of your role in maybe suggesting to Scotty, maybe we try something different, which has then kind of led to him working with Phil Kenyon, which you can see now some, you know, some progress here over the last, say, month as it pertains to strokes and putting.
Well, you know, there were a lot of things that went on in that, and Phil, you know, Phil, sweetest guy in the world. And he had a real good way of addressing, well, the heel strike. The heel strike, you know, sometimes you line the ball up the toe a little bit, you do end up coming back to the center, get it to the heel. Mm-hmm. And, you know, things like that. The technical stuff, I don't even need to get into the technical stuff, but that was pretty much the easiest part. The biggest thing was get Scotty comfortable greens again, and Scotty started doing it, but then, you know, we started working way too hard trying to do the stroke, and worked very hard trying, you know, and everybody did, just be a little more reactive, just speed the routine up a little bit, boom boom, things like that. And then one thing led to another, and then he took a different approach to putting here, really, before Bay Hill. And that approach was is to go to a stable club head, like with the spider instead of the blade, a little more stable when you stroke it. But the thing that the putter gave him was an absolute perfect picture of what the line is, because he had putted with one before, you know, and he tried it, but it just didn't look right. This putter looked right to him. And he could frame the golf ball more. Mm-hmm. And in doing so, he said, you know, why am I using the line on the ball? I mean, I'm working so hard with the line on the ball than the line on the putter that it was tangling up a little bit. So he went away from the line. He let the putter itself line him up. Okay. He freed himself up. He stood up a little bit to free up his arms a little bit. And then he started rolling the ball, and he felt comfortable. He felt more athletic, more comfortable, more prepared. Mm. And with that, the rest is history. So, you know, his mental approach and having really good targets that he's putting at, when he's putting, his ball's coming in from here, it's going this way, getting a lot more specific with his processing of the target to get in the hole. And it's just a perfect storm of good. And, you know, that's pretty much it. Because he wasn't a bad putter. You know, he went into a spell where a lot of putts didn't go in. Of course, he had a lot more opportunities than everybody else, so it became very magnified.
But there was a recognition that something, you know, needed to change. Right. And, sure. And obviously, I, you know, I had a conversation with Phil and he talked to me about some of the changes that went into it. And you could see the difference in the setup. You could see the difference in the stroke. I think the ball started coming more out of the center of the face. And right. As he got comfortable with it, you could start to see the growth with Scotty's putting, the confidence. I saw him hole some putts at the Players that I thought just were really telling, you know, and just how much he's kind of turned the corner with his putter. So, you know, there were some changes. Those changes obviously always, you know, seem to get tweaked as you go. You know, the player has an opinion, and you kind of find that middle ground to some degree, if you will. And then obviously enter the mallet putter, and all of a sudden he looks a little different at address. The stroke's a little different. Now the mallet putter, and, you know, all of a sudden he's a different person and starting to look like he's going to be living not in the red of strokes gained putting, but building on what is now, when I look at it statistically, it's 5 out of the last 6 events he's been positive in strokes gained putting. Of course, winning Arnold Palmer, winning the Players, winning the Houston Open. I'm curious, where did the I got to ask you this because, you know, in the world of social media, like the idea of the mallet putter and the switch came from Rory's suggestion. You know, Rory said something to the press that, you know, Scotty should try the mallet putter. Did that have any merit to him switching to the mallet or no?
That's
furthest from the truth. Okay.
Furthest thing from it. Scotty with the spider. He did the year before.
Okay.
And the spider he had just didn't, the look wasn't quite right. And TaylorMade came in and they said, well, let's try this. Mm-hmm. And he took a look at it and he, oh, look at this putter. And it was kind of an older, the older version. And they made him a newer version. Mm-hmm. This looks good. And then putted with it, still had the blade putter out there. And the more it wasn't a contest, you know. So no, Rory had zero to do with that suggestion. No, we were, in fact, he had the putter. If I'm not mistaken, he had the putter in his golf bag. He just never had used it.
Yeah.
That was nice of Rory to come up with that, but no, that had no bearing whatsoever.
I think it's exciting to see the growth with the putter with Scotty because he is becoming that dominant player now. And, you know, if he goes positive 4.3 like he did at Arnold Palmer, I mean, these boys are in trouble. These boys on the PGA Tour, they're in trouble because tee to green, he's dominant. And you're telling me now that he's going to start living positive 4.3 at Arnold Palmer, positive 1.2 at the Players. He was positive at Houston Open finish. I mean, if this guy's going to build now and become a, let's say, just better than average PGA Tour putter, or God forbid, one of the best putters on the PGA Tour, I mean, how good can this guy get with the flat stick, in your opinion, from based off what you've seen in the past? It's well documented, his ball striking, his short game. How much better can he get, or have you seen him putt? What are we looking at here? Can this guy become one of the best putters in the game? And if he does, now we're talking like Tiger-esque kind of discussion.
Mm. You know, the capabilities are definitely there, but I think that's for other people to come up with. I know what I think, and I like a lot. I like everything. Especially his preparation to hit him, his preparation to hit a putt, and be very tuned up on where this ball's going. Mm. And like I said, the target is telling him where to put the ball, instead of be this way, don't do this, or thinking a little bit differently. And I think his optimism when he's on the greens is becoming more evident, and that's a big, big part of it.
Yeah, that's just it, right? Like, that's kind of what I'm – and I know he missed the putt on the 72nd hole to force the playoff in Houston, and I'm sure that stings a little bit, right, for him, no doubt. But I think I just go back to the Players, and, you know, I was out there watching, and I saw you guys working some, and I watch him play, and just some of the hold putts and his reaction to those. And like, it just, you get the sense that he really feels good about the direction of where things are going, and confidence is starting to build. And he knows, I'm sure, Scotty, he knows, look, tee to green, I'm number one. So if my confidence gets in such with putting and this becomes a weapon of mine, I don't see he's not going to be beat. I don't see anybody doing what he's doing from tee to green, Randy. I just don't see it.
I'm glad you feel that way.
Well, I can boast a little bit here, right? I know you're going to be a little bit more reserved, but I think the dominant player in the game right now is a good thing. I really do. I think the identity of Scottie Scheffler as that dominant player on the PGA Tour is one of the underlining, I guess, really positive things in the professional game, because we know, you know, if we get too deep into that of that discussion, that can turn negative pretty quickly. Well, so I think the dominant force of what we're seeing with Scottie happening is great for the PGA Tour.
Well, and I'm glad you're saying that, but I'll put it more in Scotty's work, the ones he's used since he's real little. All I really want to do is get a little bit better, a little better, a little bit better. I want to get a little bit better. I'm just, you know, I just want to make a little step forward. I want to get a little bit better every time I play around. Mm. And if he just stays with, and I know he will, the simplicity of that statement, mm. then, you know, we'll let the cards fall where they may. Yeah. No telling.
No telling. There really isn't. Well, next time we'll see him, we'll be at Augusta where he won 2 years ago. He finished 10th last year. Of course, John Rahm will be in the field. All the boys from LIV. It's going to be exciting. Hey, Randy, I can't thank you enough for joining us again here on the podcast. I really appreciate it.
Well, Travis, I appreciate you asking me, and I look forward to seeing you soon. So.
Yeah, I'll come say hi next time, I promise. I was going to, and then all of a sudden you guys disappear.
It's most,
you know, Scott is popular. Like, there's people running all around him now, so it's hard to get through all these people sometimes.
Got to be careful with all that.
All right. Thanks, Randy. I appreciate it.
You got it. You take care.
Okay, you too.
Okay, bye.